relationship to Urbana as Berkeley has to UCLA. I still think that's a very operative term and an operative way of looking at things. So to move on, the other issue, or another issue, is how we on the conference deal with issues. And we have a general agreement that conference members have a dual responsibility. First, to promote the long-term goals and short-term goals with the interest of the institution, and specifically, not just as representatives of our own campuses. In addition, we have had a major expressed concern as to what the operational definition of the term consultation means. In fact, we view and we are aware every day that we are not an advise and consent body, we are only an advise body. And we understand that, so that when somebody says, well, they didn't listen to us, my answer is, they heard us, they didn't agree with us. That's a little different. So finally, we've identified that a major continuing issue and concern for the institution are the understandable conflicts as we move forward between concepts of campus autonomy and needs for centralization. Now, last year, Chairman Kennedy proposed the concept of a university-wide dialogue, or as he actually said, a summit. And as Professor Ting has told you, the three campuses agreed with that. And the Senate's conference commissioned a committee of four that I chaired. The other three members were Joyce Tolliver from the Urbana-Champaign campus, Catherine Eisenhart from UIS, and Gayula Gabori from UIC. And we put together this proposal for a cross-university dialogue, which we hope will happen in the reasonably near future. And the questions that we've put forth are questions not only do we feel should be the basis of a university-wide dialogue, but they should be the basis for all of our concerns and discussions about the University of Illinois and about the role of the relative campuses. So let me read you those four. The first question is, what are the specific core objectives for the University of Illinois, and how can these objectives be achieved? The second is, what are the decision-making processes that will lead us towards achieving those objectives while maintaining a balance between the authority of the central administration and the scope of self-governance of the campuses, especially over academic policy matters? The third question is very important, and that's, how do we envision articulation and synergy among the three campuses in the future, as well as in the present, by the way? And finally, because of the uncertainty of state funding, including specifically the liability of the state pension system, what can we do while working to address state policies? What can we do to maintain and sustain and encourage faculty enthusiasm about the university's future and its ability to move forward in the competitive academic world? Finally, given Avijit Ghosh's comments this morning that we all eagerly were waiting for, I felt it would be good to say a word about dashboards. And in reality, dashboards are certainly not new. They can be meaningful instruments in describing the metrics of reality and establishing how we are doing in relation to our peers. In fact, Dr. Koritz spends most of his day job looking at a dashboard as in the context of being an anesthesiologist. That dashboard are called the vital signs of life: temperature, pulse, blood pressure, respiration, and oximetry. And in fact, Dr. Koritz and others like him have to interpret that dashboard to the safety and prosperity, if you will, of the patient. Finally, I want to talk about another dashboard that I became all too familiar with as I drove down from Chicago to Springfield, and that's my dashboard. And on the right of my dashboard, there's a speedometer. Everybody knows the purpose of a speedometer, I think, to, among other things, to prevent police from giving you tickets, but in fact, to understand the speed of your car. Most, if not about 80 to 90% of dashboards now have on the left a dial called a tachometer. And I would argue that about 80% of people have no idea what a tachometer does. So the bottom line of all of this is, for us, the important concern is that the dashboards and dashboard we adopt for the university and the campuses reflect the ways we want to be judged and will be productive in that judgment. With that, I thank you.
All right, thank you, Don. Well, it's always illuminating, and we appreciate the effort that you made to come down here and all of the dialogue. You've been very thoughtful about us and trying to be helpful to the board as it established itself, and we appreciate that. You obviously have a great insight into the university, given your expertise and also your longevity there, so we think that's a great benefit to all of us. I think as we have the dialogue, analogs are very useful quite often. They can be terrifically illuminating, but they can also be misleading and dangerous. And I'd say that analog with the University of California system schools can be a little misleading to us because we can't embrace that. It's not present in our bylaws and our general rules. We are one university, and that's the, that's our history. That's our organizing documents. That's the opinion of the trustees voiced over and over again, and certainly the opinion of the senior administrative team. Having said that, the California schools give us a model of greatness that we should seek to achieve and duplicate. I might ask you the same question I asked Stephen. So how do we... How do we...
Let me quickly respond to your first comment. I agree with you. My aim was not to say we should be a system. My aim was to reinforce the idea we are one university with three campuses with three distinct missions.
Yes,
and in that sense, the relationship... Berkeley does not have a medical school. The medical school of the University of California in San Francisco was essentially Berkeley's medical school. And they became a separate institution. So,
well, I don't know where we're going with that.
I'm merely saying that I agree with you.
Okay.
I'm not proposing we become a system. Okay. Now, relative to the second question, great interest and responsibility is played by the faculty in program review. Each Senate has a committee called the Senate Committee on Educational Policy. There are specific rules by which those committees operate in terms of program review. So that by the time the program review gets all the way up to you, it has had a whole lot of review, and it's been reviewed by most everybody on the campus, including the provost, the chancellor, and so forth. So I think that if the answer is, if the Board of Trustees didn't exist, would we have programs? My answer is, we would have programs.
Sure, you'd manage well with us.
I don't know that we would manage as well as we do with you, but we would manage.
Well, thank you. It might be helpful for us at some point just to see what the historic recommendations of those committees have been in terms of reshaping, particularly pruning programs. So maybe we'll ask the president to assemble that for us. Thank you, Don.
Thank you
very much. Once again, we appreciate the fact that you're here.